Hey everybody, this is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories. And today I'm delighted to have another amazing woman to chat with. And I'd like to say hey to Laura. Hey Laura.
Hey Pam. Hey everybody out there in the Stutter Women land.
Laura, can you introduce yourself to us and tell us where you're from and a little bit about what you do?
Yes, my name is Laura San Martin. A lot of people call me Lori. I grew up in New York, in Queens. I've lived in California for the past 6 years in Los Angeles area. And for work, I'm a civil engineer, and I work for Los Angeles County Department of Public Works. And what civil engineering is, sometimes people know exactly what it is. Sometimes people kind of know, but they're not quite sure. So,
well, I have no idea.
yeah. just to clarify, it's pretty much engineering of all the infrastructure that you see around you. So dams, sewer treatment plants, roads, bridges, structures, all kinds of things like that. And what I work in particular is we work on roads on the pavement. So like we would recommend pavement treatments or rehab that roads need and try to program them in a cost-efficient way.
Wow. So how did you get involved in that? Don't tell me that that's what you always wanted to do since you were a little girl.
No. What I wanted to, I actually wanted to be a few different things when I was growing up. I kind of went through some stuff. But what I wanted to be for most of the time, what field I would like to pick was not what I went into because my stuttering, it did play a big role in what I felt I could do. I was always afraid of what I could handle with my speech. I mean, I always knew I was smart. I did really well in school. I worked hard, but I always, you know, I was afraid of using the phone. Mm. I was afraid of making presentations, and I felt limited because of that. I didn't know what I could handle. So what I actually ended up picking was kind of a compromise with myself at the time. Mm. I've always liked math and science, and I've always, you know, I'm interested in civil and engineering. I think it's important. I spent a lot of time traveling when I was a kid on the road, so it's always been a part of my life. So it was kind of natural. But if I wanted to do anything I want, I probably would have been maybe not a doctor, but like a nurse practitioner or something in the medical field. That would be my passion.
Mm-hmm.
That would be what I would have probably picked if I didn't stutter.
Wow, wow. I haven't really talked to anybody that actually admitted that they allowed their stuttering to dictate their career choice.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Nobody admitted that.
Nobody's actually admitted it. Yeah.
Not something I'm proud of, but it's the truth. You know, and it's not something I would do now. It's not something that I would ever recommend to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, that was where I was at. I was scared shitless. My first year of college, you know, kind of, I had to pick what I had to do. And I had to think about what my life was going to be, and yeah, I think it's something that probably a lot of people face who stutter.
Yeah. Wow. So, did you have any therapy as a kid or as a young adult to kind of help you along to the, because I mean, it sounds like right now you're okay with talking about stuttering and admitting that you stutter. Were you always okay with that?
No, I was not. I did have therapy as a kid. I don't remember a lot of the details. Mm-hmm. I do know that we worked with slowing down the speech, taking pauses. But I did some work in a university clinic working with graduate students. And then my mom, a wonderful woman who always tried to get the best for me, stuttering runs in my mom's side of the family.
Oh,
so
really?
So she was aware, and she knew, like, when she first heard it, she said, oh, we have to get her into therapy. And she was on top of it because she had a lot of experience with it with her family.
Mm.
And so she eventually found Phil Schneider, and I saw him for a while. And again, I don't remember a lot of the details because I was pretty young, but I do know that we worked on rate and pausing. But I do remember that I really enjoyed going there as a kid. I had fun when I went in therapy. He had all these cool toys and his Lego house, and so I remember that part. And Phil has remained a good friend of mine throughout the course of my life, even after we stopped therapy. Probably I was about 11, maybe 10. I don't know for sure. But he's always been a friend throughout my life, and he's always supported me, and you know, always believed in me, which was awesome. He's a very special person.
Yeah, I've never met him in person, but I went to one of his workshops a couple years ago at an NSA conference, and I also saw the documentary that he made, Transcending Stuttering, which I thought was just fabulous. So
right.
I've heard that he's like, you know, one of the best.
Whoop. Yeah, well, he's really, it's like you can see his progress in his field, in his profession, as he's just learning more and more about the stuttering and about the people that do.
Yeah.
And he has a very good handle on the bigger picture, that it's more than just this fluent speech, and that there's, you know, so much more going on, that it affects the life, and it gets worse and it gets better, and it's variable, and he gets all these other facets of it that I think are very important for a therapist to get a handle on. And
now,
yeah, he's doing a really good job with that, I think.
He doesn't stutter himself or have any stuttering in his family, does he?
No.
So do you know where? I'm sorry. Do you know where he got this passion to work with people who stutter?
No, I don't think I've ever asked him that. Like, what made him get into this? And you know, I have been meaning to ask him that. Like, what does it take for someone that doesn't stutter one day to, you know, say, hey, you know what, I really would like to work with stuttering. Yeah. I don't know, and I've always meant to ask him that. It just never came up. I don't know.
Well, now you have a homework assignment from this conversation. Now, I want to go back and just ask something, because you mentioned something about, you know, the feelings and the thoughts and the attitudes are just as, or if not more important than the stuttered speech. It almost sounds like you're using the language that covert stutterers use.
Mm-hmm.
Were you covert for a while?
Yes, and that's also ties into the whole therapy too, that I can expand on that. Yeah, I tried to hide it for most of my whole life. I either would substitute words a lot, or I would circumlocute and explain the word instead of saying it. Or if I knew I couldn't do any of those things without sounding ridiculous, I would just not talk. I just wouldn't say what I had to say.
Yeah.
And I would ask my mom to help me make my phone calls, which I hated, because I felt like a dork. And I
did she do it though?
Yeah, she would. I would try to make a lot of those calls, and I would make them, and I would block, and either I would hang up on them or they would hang up on me.
Mm.
And it just reinforced in my mind, you know, see, I can't do it, see? And that was where I was at the time, and I think that her helping me was good at the time, but it had gotten to a point where it was ridiculous. It got to a point where I couldn't live like that anymore. And that was when I went into therapy, because I wanted to as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that made the total difference, because I was willing to do whatever it took. And that enabled, I think that just made so much more successful therapy for me. And the things that we had to work on was stuttering openly and telling people that I stutter, advertising, doing surveys, mm-hmm. you know, asking them about stuttering and talking about that. And I had these homework assignments to make phone calls and, you know, tell them I stutter, please bear with me, but I have some questions for you, and ask them anything, like call up a hardware store and ask them if they have these tools in stock and what kind of brands do they have and what's the prices.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it could be anything, or order a pizza and have it delivered to your house, where you have to tell them your address and all these crazy difficult things, and saying delivery because D sounds are hard for me. And I had to purposely do all these things, and it was at first it was hell. And then as I was determined, I was at the point I said, no, I'm doing this. I am paying somebody money to tell me to do these things. And I've gained so much from that. And I wanted to get right into the stuttering modification techniques and the speech tools. But no, we have to do this advertising, acceptance, stuttering openly crap beforehand. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, great. I was like, okay, well, you know what? I told myself I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do. And luckily, I got a very good therapist. You know, I could have gotten someone that didn't really know what they were doing. So I was very lucky with that.
Right. Now, you say that you worked on the advertising and the acceptance and all that. Was it a she?
Mm-hmm.
Did she ever have you do any voluntary stuttering?
Voluntary stuttering. Yes, we did. We did work on that. We did like a 6-month program that she mm-hmm. kind of tailored towards me and told me to tailor it towards myself.
Oh, good.
And then after that program, you know, she said you're gonna stop coming here with me, but you know, you need to be your own therapist and mm-hmm. work on this yourself. You have all the tools. I gave you what I know, and I have provided you with the tools, and you know you need to do more of this on your own. Changes are not going to happen overnight. You know, it's not going to take 6 months to totally change all of your speaking habits. And so I've been working with myself for the last 3 years, and having the support of the NSA is, you know, it's really helped to motivate me to keep doing these things myself. And it took me those about those 3 years to try voluntary stuttering. Because I've been playing with that for probably the past 4 or 5 months.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, just recently. I didn't have the guts. I kind of tried it a couple times, and it would always turn into real stuttering, and it felt uncomfortable, and I didn't like it, and I wasn't ready for it. But now, like I said, I've been playing with it for the past 4 or 5 months or so, and if there's one thing that I can say that's helped me the most, that would be it.
Oh, great.
It helped me be more comfortable. It's helped me... It's weird. It's helped me learn how to stutter better. It helped me learn how to stutter more lightly, and it's actually, I'm also finding it's making me stutter less, which is not what I expected, and that's not why I'm doing it, but that's what's happening. It's just, it's taking away so much tension in my speech.
Just the voluntary stuttering itself?
I think so.
Wow.
I mean, and it's, you know, voluntary stuttering is a way to advertise and to accept. So
right.
It's like it's advertising and acceptance. That's, yeah. And it's you're directly going after what you fear. So right. It's like, you know, that's the big part of it. But I also feel like it's helping me teach myself how to manage my speech better. Because then when I do stutter, it's almost like I can stutter better and more effectively and efficiently, and I don't block. I might re-repeat some sounds, and I'll move on with the word.
Right. That's great, because you certainly do, you know, sound really confident and at ease with yourself now when we're talking. So, and are you similarly confident these days with friends and colleagues about your stuttering?
I think so, for the most part. Definitely with my friends, yes. With, like, in casual settings, yes. If I stutter on a word, I tell people, oh, you know, that's because I stutter, and, oh, really, okay. And, you know, I talk about when I went to the conference, you know, I actually told people where I went, whereas the first couple of times they didn't really want to tell people where I went.
Really?
And, yeah, it's been, I haven't had any overnight changes, you know, it's all been slow for me, which is good, actually, I prefer it that way, but yeah, now I'm at the point where casually I'll tell anyone. I mean, it doesn't bother me anymore, I don't feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
At work, with colleagues, for the most part, yes, I am like that, but I'm not 100% where I want to be at work. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that I will be. It's just time. Like I said, with me, I don't, no changes with me happen overnight. It doesn't work that way. But I'll tell anyone at work, no matter who they are, how high up they are, whatever. I've been voluntary stuttering at work, to my boss, to my boss's boss, to coworkers. But there is still a part of me that, like, when I make phone calls, you know, I feel like, you know, I want to be able to introduce myself without just stuttering, because that's the hardest part for me, is when I call someone and I introduce myself and tell them who I am. If it's someone that I don't know well or that I don't work with a lot, that's the hardest thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it still does get to me, like, you know, gosh darn, I always want to be able to introduce myself and say my darn name without a production.
Right.
It's like, there's still a part of me that, you know, is not quite there yet, but that's because I'm still nervous about making the phone calls. When I'm not nervous about the phone calls, my name comes out fine. When I call people that I know well, that I work with all the time, it's fine. I feel like at work, you know, I'm being paid there. I feel like it's not just me. It's like I'm a representation of my employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm educated and I'm professional and I should sound like that. And there's still a part of me, you know, deep down that feels like, well, if I stutter, maybe I'm not sounding professional. And it's a bunch of crap. It's not true. It's
right.
Absolutely not true, because I work with some people that they speak fluently, but they cannot communicate. and I hear it. I listen to them. I hear people at meetings or whatnot when they're both saying things to each other, but they're saying it for themselves. They're saying two different things. They're not trying to meet halfway. And I'm looking like, you people, are you crazy? It's like, communicate. You have all this fluency, damn you. Communicate, you know, and they're in their own little world. And stuttering does not make you less professional, I don't think. I've been complimented on my communication skills, and I've actually had people will prefer to talk to me than to other people in my unit because
really?
Of that. Yeah. And so I know it's in my head. I know that's the thought, that's the way of thinking that I have to get out, and I have to do that by, you know, making more phone calls and realizing that the world's not going to blow up when I, you know, have a hard time saying my name or something.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that you said that, you know, you've been complimented on your communication skills. How does that make you feel, honestly, to be complimented, you know, when you know that, you know, there's that you stutter and that, you know, you stutter sometimes.
Yeah, it just makes me laugh and makes me shocked. It makes me amazed. And yeah, I mean, it's happened a few times and I'm like, are you kidding me? It surprises and shocks me. And I've actually told people when they tell me, I said, you know, I stutter, right? And they're like, yeah, but they say, oh, well, it's not much, you know, it's pretty mild. They go, but you get to the point and you listen to people and you work and you say, I don't know, you don't piss people off like some other people do when they try to work together and they, you know, like their egos and like you get to the point, you're not, like we, at one point we were working with the public a lot. And they would actually, like, sometimes if, you know, we had a constituent that wasn't happy and, you know, they had a hard time dealing with them, you know, someone that was kind of causing problems, the people that I worked with were like, oh, you know, I'll let him talk to Laura, she'll straighten him out. It's like... And I don't know what it is. I think that being a person who stutters, you like maybe being covert. I always knew that there was more to me than people saw.
Mm-hmm.
That I had all this stuff going on under the surface that nobody else knew about, and sometimes that would affect my behaviors. Like people thought that I was shy, and I said, no, I'm not shy. I'm not uncomfortable around people. I'm just quiet
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to talk, because talking's hard for me.
Right.
But it's not shy.
Right.
Being shy is uncomfortable. You're intimidated by people. I've never felt that way. It's just, it's quiet, not shy, but people interpret it that way. So I always knew that there was more to me that people couldn't see because it's not on the surface, or they see one thing on the surface, but there's other motivations to people's behaviors that might not be obvious to you, and I always knew that about me. So I assume that, well, maybe it's like that with other people too. So I always try to look deeper into people. Where are they coming from? What's their motive? Why is this person unhappy? Why are they complaining? You know, what is their problem? Put yourself in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what helps someone be a better communicator, because they listen and they get on the same page with another person, and you can't communicate with someone if you're not on the same page as them and you're just talking for your benefit. And I've seen people do that.
Yeah.
it doesn't work. So yeah, I think in a way it's made me a better communicator.
Yeah. Well, what popped into my head when you said that is that sometimes people have told me too that, you know, they think that I have great communication skills. And for a long time, and sometimes I still do it, I sometimes say things like, oh, no, I don't, you know, or, you know, because I feel like, you know, I'm very self-critical. And, you know, like, even though somebody's paying me a compliment, I sometimes feel like, oh, I don't deserve that, you know, because I'm bringing up all my covert baggage again. And that's why I asked you, how does it make you feel? I wondered if you ever, you know, try to say, oh, no, that's not true, or, you know.
No, I think I take people for their word. I mean, of course, it depends who is saying it. You know, I mean, the people who have said it to me are people that I don't think are just talking just to blow off steam, you know, or when people want something from you, they might tend to compliment you because they want something from you. So it's kind of situational too. You know, you have to, if it was said in a different context, in a different situation by a different person, I might have doubted it too. Mm-hmm. But it was mostly like there wasn't, these are comments that came out of the blue, or it would be things like, you know, people that I worked with, that I trusted, that I respected, who are the ones that, you know, told me when there was, like, a problem person, you know, have them talk to me. It's like I knew they weren't saying that just to say it, because they were people that I worked so closely with and were good quality people. So.
Yeah. Wow. Now I want to be sure we get time in for what I really wanted to find out more about. when I was at when we were at the NSA conference, I found myself really, thanking myself for the good fortune of choosing to come to a workshop that you co-facilitated with Joseph Diaz for teens, and you were talking about, you know, ways to overcome and handle fear. And you used a personal experience in your own life that you're really passionate about, and I just found that just so intriguing. So could you talk a little bit about that and what you do and how you use that for that workshop?
Sure. For all of you out there, I skydive on a regular basis, pretty much. I jump about almost every weekend. It's a hobby. I have about 440-something jumps right now at the time, which is not considered a lot. I mean, people have, like, thousands of jumps that do this as a hobby. But I used that in a teen workshop that we did at the NSA conference, and the topic, which Joseph picked. He had asked me to co-present with him after he had the topic picked and everything. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of went along with his thing. And the topic was feared speaking situations, like talking on the phone, giving presentations, asking someone out on a date, ordering food at a restaurant, all these things that we have had to deal with throughout our lives that most people don't. And so the way I got the idea to use this skydiving video from Russ Hicks. He was actually the one that that thought of that. And so what I did was I used the video of my first ever jump, my first ever skydive, and where I was afraid, I was scared, and in a good way, in a fun way, but it was scary, and, you know, you kind of get to see me on there, like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? So I used that as the first thing that they saw. I said, you know, I'm going to show you a video now to introduce our topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so after, you know, they watched the first jump video, which is, they thought it was really cool and, you know, really, really fun. They were like, whoa, you know, like you can actually get to see the whole view and fall through the sky with me. And then at the end, I said, you know, that was my first jump. I now have over 400 jumps. I make this a hobby. And I showed them a picture of one of our jumps that had about 35 people on it. We're all in a group and like a little formation thing. And so I said, do you guys think this seems scary, right? I mean, this is something that you would agree is a scary thing. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think most people would agree, right? Yeah, okay. So then we went, I said, well, I have something that I think is even scarier than that, and maybe some of you might agree. And I said, well, let's move on to Exhibit B, scary thing. And Exhibit B, scary thing, the next slide, was a picture of a telephone. And I said, I know most people might not look very scary, but for me, this little stupid piece of plastic has caused me more fear and anguish and stress than something like, say, jumping out of a plane numerous times. So that, you know, why, and I did that to get them thinking, you know, what are we afraid of? Why are we afraid of certain things? Kind of offer a perspective that, you know, people that stutter, where we gain and create these fears. And sometimes I feel like I have to try to tell myself to step back and look in the big picture, like, why am I afraid of this silly thing? Why am I afraid of saying my name? Why am I afraid of making a phone call? And it makes sense if you look at our experiences throughout our life. And But I just use that to offer perspective and, you know, to just introduce the topic and to get them talking about their feared situations.
Yeah, it was a great analogy, even as an adult who stutters, who was, you know, there in the audience watching, because it really did make you think, how can we be so afraid of, you know, such, you know, little things that most people take for granted. And I think, at least in my humble opinion, I think people who stutter fear, you know, speaking situations because we're afraid of the negative social reactions or punishment that we get, you know, being made fun of or dismissed or ignored. So I thought it was just a perfect example that you chose. But let me ask you, how did you prepare for that first jump out of an airplane? I mean, did you have to, I mean, I'm sure you physically prepared, but how do you mentally prepare to do that?
Well, yes, we did physically prepare because, you know, there's the things you have to do on the jump, there's things you have to learn about the canopy, how to handle any problems. So there's all those things were in my mind. I had to do certain things on the jump. I had to do practice touches to make sure that I could find where I have to pull and all that stuff and check my altitude. So I had all those things in my mind. And I was trying to remember that the whole way up on the plane. Okay, I have to do this, da da da. But then once we got up, like, pretty high and it was almost time to go, I couldn't think about that stuff quite anymore because I had to say, I got to make sure I can get my butt out of this plane. And I'm not going to, you know, chicken out and go. So what I was telling myself for the last portion of it was out in, out, because that's how you time your count. Like you're going to stand on the edge of the door with the jump masters going with you, who are going to hold you and, you know, keep you still and everything, and make sure that they pull if you don't, you pull at the right time. So you have to do this count so that they know when you're going to go, so you'll leave at the same time. It's very critical that happens. So, and the count, you know, you shift towards the outside of the door, inside of the plane, and then out. And that left out is when you jump out. And I just kept telling myself for a while, okay, out in, out. Out in, out. All I have to do is make that first step. And that's how I'm going to do it. Out in, out. And make that step. Make that one step. I was just telling myself it was that one step. And I feel like I've been kind of drawn to these extreme things because not that I do like a lot of crazy stuff, but I even like simple things like skiing, like when we went skiing with the group. I'm like always the girl that's doing the stuff with the guys, like pushing themselves, because I feel like in my whole life I've always been afraid to do these silly things like making a phone call. Every day there's always something, some speech that made me fearful, and I knew other people didn't feel that way, and I always felt like, you know, I'm not a scared person. I'm not a fraidy cat, you know. I'm not, it's just this stuttering thing is hard to deal with, and I think like I always wanted to prove to myself, you know, that and I'm not scared of most things, that I do have more courage than most people, and I just can't make phone calls and things like that. So I knew I would be fine once I got out. So I didn't feel like I had to mentally prepare past getting out the door. I knew that once I was out, I would be okay. It's just making that one step, and that's exactly how it was. Once I got out, I was all smiles. It was the coolest thing.
What did it feel like flying through the air that first time?
It's a lot of people explain it the same way: sensory overload. You can't explain it to someone that's never experienced it, but the best way to describe it is that all of your senses are heightened. You can see everything from miles from an angle that you're not used to seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can smell the air is coming at you at 120 miles an hour. It's like you can smell all this stuff. It's loud. It's very loud because there's a lot of wind.
Yeah.
And it's you can scream on top of your lungs and not hear it, you know. And then you can feel all the wind coming at you. You feel the wind doing these weird things to your body, and you're trying to stay stable. And so it's like sensory overload. It's the only thing. It tastes that doesn't change, but everything else is just sensory overload. It's not scary. It's just impressive. It's overwhelming, much more than it is scary, because there's really nothing to be scared of.
Yeah, and why do you keep doing it?
I just loved it. The perspective that it gives you, it's just so weird. It's so different. It feels like you're in this other world, and I loved the feeling. And I felt accomplished. I felt very proud of myself. I felt like, you know, I've done something that most people don't do. And then it becomes like it's like you're pushing and testing yourself and kind of getting to know yourself better, because you're pushing your limit based on fear, and then you're also trying to learn skills, like to learn how to fly and to stay stable and to turn and to roll and to do all these things. So you have to learn to use your body in a different way, and I find that fascinating.
Wow. Well, this whole conversation with you has been fascinating. I'm so glad that we had the chance to catch up with each other. And you know, it's funny, because when you talk to anybody, there's always a story, you know. But especially with women who stutter, I mean, there's just like you say, there's so much more to people than people see, you know.
Yeah.
Got to actually talk to people and give them a chance to share their story, and I'm so glad you did with us today.
Awesome. Thank you, Pam. I'm glad I had the opportunity. I was excited to be on this podcast, and I was a little bit nervous. You could tell I was stuttering more in the beginning. But no, this is great. Thank you for doing what you do, because I think I find it so helpful to listen to a podcast about stuttering. I listen to Stutter Talk, and now I'm listening to this one to women who stutter, and I find it's very helpful. So you're doing a great thing, I think.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and your story is going to inspire people as well. So again, thank you, and this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.